Okay, Guten Tag. We are in Shara HaBitochen, Perek Shlishi. The Chayim Salvamis is in the middle of laying down for us the premises for Bitochen. And as we've been discussing, what he did with us in the last Perek, in the previous Perek, I think is the way, for me personally, was what really, really brought Bitochen home. To a very, very practical level. It's amazing. This is one of what the Chovetz Chaim did here. Let's just remind ourselves. You know what? In this parak, he's going to remind us. But he took, basically, he showed us that bitachon is a matter of taking things that you already know, just you're not necessarily conscious of all of them at the same time and in real time, and bringing them together and focusing on them. And then bitachon becomes almost easy. Again, I'm not saying that becomes easy, but it already becomes very much in the ballpark. It can be facing a tough situation, and you're already, it definitely makes it much easier once you are really focused on these things, which are all things that we already know, and to a large extent, really have internalized. But instead of recapping, the Chovetz Chaim is going to do it himself. So let's move on to the third parak, Shara Bitochen Parak Shlishi. So to help us with the English, what page is it in the English?
368, near the bottom.
Page 368 in the Feldheim. Shalom Bitochen Perek Shlishi. So, Acha Hakdomes Asher Belikim Hin Chamesh. There are five premises for Bitochen.
It's the top of page 372.
So there are five premises for bitachon. Let's just remind ourselves, what is bitachon? Bitachon is that sense of security, knowing that whatever's going on, I am in the best of hands with the best plan possible for me. So now he says, in order to really reach ultimate bitachon, there have to be five things in place. Now, last week he told us seven things. So let's see. Now we're going to see in a moment that having those seven clear is the first of the five. So let's see. Achas mehen, number one is sheyamin v'isbara etzlay hiskaptus hashiv enyan milikim. You want to have very clear and internalized the 5 points that we discussed, the 7 points that we discussed earlier, that really provide you with the means. If you have these things clear, they provide you with the means of just completely relying. What are they? So I'm going to move through it now. We're going to be skipping. We're going to be reading a few words and then skipping. So don't get confused. So let's remember, point number one of the 5 points that should be in place for you to really reach ultimate bitachon. Point number one is having the 7 points from last week clear. What are they? So let's review this again. These 7 points is something that really bear endless repetition. I would even say you could have it in short on your fridge, these 7 points, it's mamish, a day-to-day thing to live with. The 7. What are the 7? So Arishon, number one is Shabbore Yisborach Merachem ala Odom Yoser Mikol Merachem. Hashem cares for you more than anybody else does. Mikol Rachamim v'chemla sheyil mizulose alav. Any care or compassion that you've ever felt from somebody else, he merachame hakel v'chemlos, is really all part of Hashem's care for you. This is something to focus on in and of itself. This is just the first of the 7. But this is really something that deserves its own department. The realization that Hashem cares for you. If you want to put it into our terms, that Hashem loves you and cares for you more than any love you've ever experienced. We've experienced pretty powerful love in our life. We've experienced the love of parents, right? We've experienced the love of a spouse. We've experienced all kinds of love, Baruch Hashem, we've experienced. But to realize that all that is mamish, a drop in the bucket in terms of the love
that Hashem has for you. In fact, he's saying even more than that, that you have to realize that the love that you've experienced, parents' love, is actually a function of Hashem's love. Hashem is letting some of his love for you trickle through them. And you'll never experience in this world the full extent of Hashem's love. It's so immense that you can't really contain it in this world. It's there the whole time, but Hashem is keeping a certain distance for the purpose of our job in this world. The next world, we really sense it. Let me ask a question.
Yeah. So let's say, Chas v'Shalom, one later, there's a child who's neglected or abused by their parents. So what conclusion are they supposed to draw by that? Is that hate, that abuse, and that neglect? You're supposed to say that also came from Hashem?
So Chas v'Shalom, if a person did not experience a parent's love, what do we do there? So the truth is that it's true that that person is missing the major muscle. I certainly won't say that if you, we're not saying in an absolute way, use parents as the absolute muscle for Hashem. We would like to think that that's definitely the rule basically across the board. But if Chalila, a person was in a situation where they did not provide him with that model, so it's true that tragically, the person does not have that muscle. If he has other people in his life where he did get that love from, so then he would use that as the muscle. You're asking how should he relate to that then? So then we'll come back to the general subject of, here it's very painful because where the source of love should have been coming from, it didn't come from. But in terms of just the Khalil, if there were other things that he experienced, so it comes back to the general question of, we know that Hashem's love is there, but yet we might have experienced other things too. How do we fit that in with the picture of Hashem's love? It's true. A person who did not experience parents' love is missing one of the main tools that we have for really appreciating Hashem's love. Where will he get it from? Baruch Hashem, I wasn't tested with that. I wasn't tested with that, so I won't presume to give the answer for that. But what I will say is that all of us are given our different areas and challenges. And each package comes with its challenges and its opportunities. And how Hashem decides to divide the challenges and opportunities up, that itself is because of Hashem's very individual plan for each person. No two people have the same life circumstances. Each person has a very, very specific plan. And we don't know if a person is missing. It's one of the things that most of us would consider most of the fundamental needs and crutches that we need to move through this world. We don't know what Hashem might be equipping him with in other ways, whether it's emotional abilities, etc. And we also don't know. Hashem might have a very specific plan for this person that he will be able to reach certain places that other people won't because they didn't go through these experiences. But
more than that, like if you say any love you experience is from Hashem, is any hatred you experience also from Hashem?
No, that we don't say. We're saying that any love, we're not saying that.
It's not considered divine from Hashem, like everybody says, yeah, so even the one who's hurting a person. Like it's Hashem's
okay.
Using that as a
shliach. So we're asking question. If we're saying that, okay, so we're asking a good question. We're asking, so wait a minute, but isn't it so if a person has experienced pain or hatred, chas v'shalom, that this also is coming from Hashem, that this is also being sent in from Hashem, and that the person inflicting that pain is actually a shliach of Hashem? The answer is yes, but we still have to understand the point that the Chodesh Halavos is making here and differentiate. If a person experienced any sort of pain, there's no question that that is what Hashem intended for him. But that is not what characterizes Hashem's. The Chazal is not coming with the simple equation that, well, anything you're experiencing is coming from Hashem, and therefore it characterizes your relationship with Hashem. It's not what he's saying. He's not saying that if you experience love from your parents, understand that that comes from Hashem, and therefore that's what characterizes Hashem. That's not the point that he's making, because if so, you're right. Anytime that happens, if a person falls and bangs his knee, we'll say, well, that characterizes the whole way that Hashem relates to you. It's not what he's saying. He's starting with an axiom. The axiom starts from the other place. Hashem's primary dynamic with you, Hashem's main feeling for you is immense love. You know where you can experience it? Hashem, it happens to be. I shouldn't say happens to be because it's actually built in part of the plan. But it happens to be that Hashem is letting you experience some of that. He's letting some of that trickle through your parents or through other sources of love that you've experienced. But it doesn't start from there. We're not starting from there saying, well, let's see, anything that you've experienced in your life,
See that as characterizing the way Hashem relates to you. That's not what we're saying. Pain. A parent might put a child through pain. We certainly won't say that a very caring parent will put a child through pain at different points, right? We certainly won't say, well, now you're supposed to understand from this experience how your parents relate to you. No, there are very, very specific purposes in the pain that they might be putting you through, right? Your child's been to the doctor, been to a dentist, etc. I'm not going to come and say, okay, this is how my parents want me to understand. They're the ones who put me here. They're even holding me down. Right? They're even holding me down while the dentist is doing his thing. No, we do have to know to differentiate between things that Hashem is putting me through for a purpose. So it's just important to clarify that. We're not saying, hey, see your parents' love, now you understand what Hashem feels. No, it's the other way around. The number one premise is the axiom is that Hashem loves you intensely. Whether you've experienced that or not is not the inherent point. We're just saying you can get a taste of it through the love that you experienced. But that's not really the main point. I hope this is clear.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, we're coming back to the to this understanding. Yisrael Sisharim, the Ramchal, author of Yisrael Sisharim, makes this point in a different sefer, Das Tvunis. Now we know that there's Rachamim and there's Din, etc. He says, but these are all under the general umbrella of Chesed. Even Din is really there as part of getting you to the Chesed that Hashem wants to get you to. But okay, we come back to the point. Number one point to realize is that Hashem loves you intensely. Focus on that. Focus on that and appreciate it. Another point that I just want to make is that we don't want to let these questions like this sidetrack us, meaning if we've experienced love, let's utilize it before wondering about what do we do with the cases that didn't, right? So we don't want to allow ourselves to get sidetracked by the unusual cases that will need to be explained on their own. Okay, but that's number one. Hashem loves you intensely. Number two, Hashem does not disregard, nothing goes over Hashem's head. Hashem is very aware of whatever is best for you. Like this is point number two. Hashem understands your needs and knows what's best for you better than you do. That's fundamental number two. Number three, Ashlishi. He can do whatever he wants. So the one who loves you the most also knows your needs best and also can get whatever he wants done. And number four is, he is constantly on top of everything going on with every person. He never neglects it. He never is distracted from it. From the smallest matter in your life to the biggest one, nothing is off Hashem's radar. Hashem is on top of every last detail in your life constantly. Nothing distracts. Okay, so that's number four. Number five is she'ein biyad echad min abruim lahayel snafshe v'le'lazika kim birshus haboyeris. Nobody can get a foot or a finger in unless Hashem wants it. Meaning, we said before, yes, Hashem is holding you in His hand. He loves you. He's focused on you constantly. He can do whatever He wants, which means that you're in pretty good hands. Never distracted. But besides that, nothing can happen outside of this plan. Nobody can get anything in edgewise. Vashishi. And the sixth point to understand is the point that Hashem doesn't need you to earn His chesed. Hashem is showering you with chesed without you earning it. You don't have to worry about earning it. Sheyeda raiv tuva elikim al adam. This is something that you have to get used to understanding. You have to appreciate Hashem's goodness to you. You have to understand that Hashem has been showering you with good way before you could do anything to deserve it. But from the moment you were conceived, Hashem was busy caring for you intensely. You have to remember all the complex processes just of the fetus developing. We've discussed a few times, nature is not a Shabbos clock. Nature is not a Shabbos clock. It's not that there's a system of nature in place and, you know, that functions by itself with Hashem kind of like overseeing it from above. And an ace is when Hashem decides to get involved. Nature, the way the Kuzari puts it, is wherever you use the word nature, you can really just replace it with Hashem. Anything you say about nature, just replace it with Hashem. That's Hashem doing it just with the same level of intimate involvement as anything that we call outside the realm of nature. Don't do it, but the Gemara said, he put it was, nature is really a meaningless word invented by the Greeks. Just use the word Hashem instead of nature. So, to appreciate that Hashem has been showering you with so much good, you can't even keep up with it from way before you were deserving. So when you're worried, is Hashem, one minute, I'm facing a situation now. I hope Hashem is going to do the best thing for me. Did I earn it? Trust Hashem. He didn't require you to earn many, 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 many of the other benefits that you already got from him. Lashmi. And number seven is, she is the barer etzler. You have to appreciate. Now, the way he put this earlier, he's approaching this last point from a different angle than he did earlier in the previous perek. But that point was to appreciate that when Hashem is taking care of you, he's not just worried about the here and now. He's dealing with the full picture of when he's doing something for you right now, it's because he's holding in his hand, if we just want to put it simply, from the moment you were born until the last moment on earth. But really, as we keep stressing, it goes from way before that to way after that. So to realize that Hashem is busy planning, he had already been planning your affairs from 800 years ago and earlier. And what he's doing now is also taking into account much later, which already makes us understand that just let go, let him worry about it, because all I can encompass is the very limited window of how much could I already be factoring in when I'm busy trying to figure out what's good for me right now. So the way he puts that here is, puts it in a little bit of a more complex way. I want to elaborate on it. It's worth understanding. She is bara etzler. Person has to have clear. That everything that happens in this world, whether it seems to be an important event in and of itself, or just something haphazard that happened, gvul yadua, a very clear definition, meaning, lo yoisiv ve lo yigra al mashe goza abo yisbach bekamusoy ve chusoy zmanen koyme. Any event, or any item, etc., anything that comes into being in this world is planned precisely by Hashem. When should it begin? When should it end? How intense should it be? Let's talk about Chalila, an illness. Okay? So exactly when it should begin, exactly when it should end, exactly how intense it will be, is all with a very, very clear plan. Or, let's say Hashem brings a war. So here also, exactly what area the war will encompass is precisely planned by Hashem. Anything, any event, any item, its nature, everything about it, the time it will exist, when it will begin, when it will be, and how exactly it will play out, is under very, very close control. If Hashem decided something should be only a little bit, There's no way to expand on that. If Hashem decided that something should be a lot, there's no way to take that down. I'll explain a little more. I'm going to put it down. It's a little bit abstract right now, but we'll bring this home momentarily. If Hashem wants something to happen at a certain point, there's no way you're going to be able to delay it. If Hashem wanted it to happen later, there's no way you're going to make it earlier. Another famous story, there was a chuppah. The Biskarov was Masad the Kiddushin at a chuppah. And the chassan kept dropping the ring. He was very nervous, his hand was shaking, whatever it is. He kept dropping the ring. Dropped it once, picked it up, dropped it again. Dropped it 3-4 times. So people started saying, is it a sin in Hashemayim? Is this a bad sign? This marriage is not. So the Biskarov, who was standing there, he was Masad the Kiddushin, he said, no, I want to understand what's happening here. This marriage is supposed to begin at a precise second. The problem is that we all got to the chuppah about 90 seconds too early. And therefore, the chassan needs to drop the ring a few times until we get to the precise second that this marriage was supposed to happen. Then it'll happen. So this is the point that the Chavis Olamis is making here. Everything has a very precise moment that it's supposed to happen. Now, if sometimes it seems that, no, something did not run its natural course, it did get cut off earlier, that is exactly the way Hashem set it up in the first place. Now, he's going to make the point as follows, and instead of continuing to read it, I'll speak it out so we don't get lost in the Hebrew. I'll give an example. I'll give a personal example. Oh Hashem, I'm happily married, and so is my sister. I want to talk about briefly my shidduch and a shidduch of my sister's. So my sister learned in Gates Inn. And one of the rabbanim there was one of the chashev rabbanim there, who somehow or the other came up. My sister somehow said, told him things about me. And also at one point, my father had a few conversations with this same Rav, also told him a few things about me. And then he asked him, my father very much appreciated Gateshead, the seminary and the way they operate, etc. So he asked him, have you heard about my son, etc.? Would you name a girl that you would suggest? So he said, yeah. He named a certain girl that he thought sounded tsugepas, sounded appropriate. But for whatever reason, he wasn't able to actually suggest the shidduch. Okay, this girl was from Toronto. He wasn't able to actually suggest the shidduch. Okay, but my father was very keen on trying to pursue this shidduch because he very much respected this Rav and he felt that he had a good handle on things and very much liked the merchandise that they had in Gated. And okay, so my father wanted to pursue the shidduch. This Rav wasn't going to be able to suggest it. So my father was trying to see, who do we know in Toronto? We didn't really know anybody in Toronto. He found someone who the family had some faint acquaintance. Do you know my grandfather? Okay. Asked him, would you suggest the shidduch? So this man did suggest the shidduch. Whatever it wasn't relevant. So my parents got a rather surprising phone call like the next day or something. This person, he was what you call a chevraman in Hebrew, I'm very familiar with the term. He tells my father, my mother, I forgot who was on the phone, he says, well, that shidduch doesn't seem to be relevant, but I took the liberty of suggesting it to somebody else. That somebody else is my wife. That was the story. Now, the point that I want to make here is that I learned in Mir, had a lot of exposure there. If you're learning in Mir, you're exposed to hundreds of people. Right? Baruch Hashem had a lot of friends, a lot of different things coming up. My shidduch didn't come from anybody who knew me. My shidduch didn't come from anybody who knew me. It came from my sister in Gateshead. So basically what's coming out is that perhaps my sister went to Gateshead. So for the purpose of my shidduch, Okay, now how did my sister's shidduch come about? She had plenty of exposure in Gateshead. What's that? That's right. What happened? What happened was there was a pair of chavrusas who sat behind me. I learned with my chavrusa. One bench, a pair of chavrusas behind me. Now, the whole general neighborhood, it was a lot, it was a whole chabura. We did a lot of talking and learning together. So we all became kind of like a chevra. There's more to it, meaning in terms of the setup that Hashem manipulated here, but I'm going to do one piece at a time. So this person was sitting behind me, this pair of chavrusas behind me. I was a bit of an anomaly. I was part of the Israeli chevra. I went through the Israeli yeshiva system. I came to Mir from a different angle than most of the Americans. I was part of the Israeli chevra there. So I had a very nice relationship with the people around me. And this person, Israeli Avreich, mentioned to his father-in-law about a special American boy who he knows, who really likes him, etc. Okay, his father-in-law, I think Abraham Yerushalayim, I don't know where, he knew one American family. He knew somebody from America. You know the thing that you tell an Israeli, I come from America. You come from America, do you know X, Y, Z? So he knew someone from America. Very fine family. I don't know if they were cousins of his, I don't know what, but he knew an American family. They had a very good daughter. So he wanted to suggest a shidduch. He's a nice American boy. Where's an American boy going to find an American girl? So he suggested this shidduch. The shidduch did not come to pass. And shidduch didn't work out. But in the interim, this man, okay, this is the father-in-law of the Avreich who sat behind me, you know, the Sheikh is, okay? Well, this man got to know my father, got exposed to the family, he ended up suggesting for my sister from Gateshead, right, that same sister, he suggested for her a shidduch from Bnei Brak that nobody would have ever thought relevant, okay? Now, beautiful family living at the bottom of Sorek. She has an amazing husband. We're all in awe of him. They have a large, beautiful mishpacha. Okay? And now you understand why Hashem settled this pair of chavrusas right behind me. But you know what? Let's think about it for a minute. On the first day of this Zman, when everybody was coming and kind of setting themselves up in their places, everyone's finding their place, right? This bench, that bench. Places are filling up. You have to find a place. You know the general area we were assigned to. But if you had come 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later, that very, very much impacts the place you're going to get. Right? That's the way it works. So what would have happened if this pair of chavrusas would have showed up 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later? Or if we would have showed up 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later? Very likely that we would have been in two very different places. Right? And then, again, like you said, there's a whole large, beautiful family. Yeah, you think about it for a minute. What would have happened if they would not, if they would have shown up 5 minutes later? You know what the answer is? They would not have showed up 5 minutes later or 5 minutes earlier. Because it was all manipulated exactly when they would appear, right? And the fact that I would be in the same base medrash was all a part of Hashem's plan, aiming for a shidduch for my sister. Shidduchim is one of the areas where you could see it most, but it's relevant to so many areas in life where things are being manipulated from all kinds of different ways. Now I'll say further, right? Go back to the story of my shidduch. This girl was suggested to me from Gateshead, right? I'm just trying to picture in my mind, right? When they were deliberating, this girl's family were deliberating, well, should she go to Gateshead or should she go to, I don't know where, Lucerne, okay? So they're weighing the pros and cons. Hashem decided she should go to Gateshead. Why? Because she has to be in Gateshead in order for me to get my shidduch, because they have to suggest her to me. It has to be not relevant. The shadchan has to go to somebody else, and then I'll get my shidduch. Now, that sounds a little bit egocentric to say that she had to be in Gateshead so that I can get my shidduch. There's no question in my mind there were other reasons why she was in Gateshead, right? But nevertheless, Hashem is busy putting things in place in all kinds of ways. Hashem intertwines a lot of complex plans. We have to realize that every little thing going on, a little earlier, a little later, seems so insignificant. Hashem is busy manipulating these things from years in advance and from centuries in advance, right? For not just leading up to the big events that have to happen, but leading up to said before, who knows how many people are moving around from one place of the globe to the other. A family moves, etc. Why? Not so that one of the people in the family should find a shidduch, but because there's a shidduch that has to happen 600 years from now.
We have a story in our family where my father's family was leaving Germany, and they were deciding. One part of the family wanted to go to Palestine at the time. The other part of the family wanted to go to America. They decided not to go to Eretz Yisrael because one of the family members was a furrier, and what are you going to do with fur in Palestine? So they ended up going to America, and here I am. Because my father met my mother, and what would have happened if they had gone?
That's right. So many, yes.
There's another story similar to that, like with the shidduch stories where it's all good. I think it's in the book Holy Woman. That the only reason why the Sefer Rebbe was Eretz Yisrael, which they say could sever, is like fully against, you know, we made that shidduch, but like it should. But I also used to go to a Chumash class, which would say Hashem has plan A, plan B, plan C. They would have gone to Israel, it would have come out differently. Like, you can't, because I can think of the stories of my life, my children's life, when things didn't go good. And then, okay, later on, you can say, well, because this one didn't get into this school and ended up here, she ended up meeting her husband like that. But so, okay, so I can say, good. So she had certain stars at certain stages, but later on, she got to meet her husband. But I'm thinking, she could have still had maybe had gotten to meet her husband, had everything on the normal.
Okay. So let's make it clear.
Like Yosef's going to say, look, telling the brothers, yes, Hashem wanted them to be in Mitzrayim, Avraham Avinu went to Mitzrayim, but it didn't have to be for the Yosef's, the brothers choosing it. They would have still gone, Hashem would have made the hunger, and Yaakov still would have brought them to Mitzrayim. They didn't have to be Yosef's brothers, because you see they get punished for that, sorry, with your mom. Like,
okay, so we definitely have to.
In a situation like that, like, your whatever, whichever person would not have been, they wouldn't have been the proper shidduch for that person unless they had gone through whatever they had to go through, because they developed into a certain type of person.
Okay, that's the good way of looking at it, but still, there are times where, like you say, with Yosef's brothers or anything else, it didn't have to happen that way. It could have happened. Okay. Hashem would have made it happen a different way.
So first of all, so you know, let's put this into perspective. It's true. Hashem is what we call in the Pasuk, with all these different examples that we're giving, we are not presuming to say, okay, now we have all the complexity figured out. Mm-hmm. We're giving small samplings that can kind of fit our small minds of the complexity of Hashem's plans. But you know what? Let's even take the example of Yosef's story, right? Yosef was a person who had the right hashkafa, right? He always maintained that hashkafa. There's a lot of studying to do just in terms of you want a midas program for life, study the life of Yosef HaTzadik. But note something. Yosef says to his brothers, now we understand why Hashem made you sell me, because this way I'm able to provide for you, right? Yosef was doing a beautiful example of seeing the big picture. But you know what? Even that was just a tiny part of the picture that Hashem really had in mind. It was a much grander plan than Yosef providing for his family. There was the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, of Kriyas Yamsuf. That's what Hashem was leading it all up to. So we're never going to encompass the full picture. Sometimes we can get different bits and pieces, but we're not presuming to say, oh, now I have it all figured out, and now I understand why it had to be this way and not that way. We're using these things as small samplings, but that's why it's true. We're not going to go and really start figuring out, now it makes sense. It had to be precisely this way. That's really the term. It's from Yeshaya Navi to relate to all these things. Hashem is a master planner. Things that are being done have an immediate purpose. They have a purpose for 2 years from now. They have a purpose for 800 years from now. The same little story. And they have where it's fitting into the grander, bigger picture of Malchus Shamayim and the ultimate Gilui of Hashem at the end of time. That's what the Ramchal says. There isn't that tiny thing that happens on earth that isn't really working into that great, grand picture of Hashem's ultimate revelation, where we'll mamish see how every tiny aspect of our lives was contributing to that and how it couldn't have been any other way. Now, there's always the question of, couldn't Hashem have done it a different way? Sometimes the answer is that he is making this work in tandem with our free will. Sometimes the answer is that no, it couldn't have been a different way. Why not? We could conceive of a different way. We're only thinking in terms of our limited material exposure. But at the end of time, this is at the end of the day, this is an issue of emunah. It's not just an issue of saying, here, now we've illustrated one or two cases, now you can understand how it all works. No, these are samplings. But it's the understanding that Hashem is not with us stuck in the here and now. Hashem is operating with a much, much, much broader picture with anything that he's busy doing with us. That's why we say the pasuk, Malchuscha, Malchus kol olamim. That's the point. You know, let me approach it from this angle. What's the most ubiquitous letter in the Torah? All right, let's get like this. I'm going to get a little closer to home. What is the most psukim in the Torah start with which letter? If you think about it for a minute, you'll chav. Vav. Most psukim in the Torah start with the letter Vav. And it was. Why is everything and? The vast majority of psukim start with and. Even the beginning of Sfarim, there's nothing happening before it. It starts with and, right? Vayihi b'nei Achashverosh. There's nothing before that. Why always the and? The answer is it's exactly the point. This is part of what's being conveyed here. Whatever's happening now is the continuation of a plan that's been unfolding from way before. No, that story did not start in a vacuum. That's exactly the point. The end is coming to emphasize that whatever is going on is the unfolding of things that Hashem has been setting in place. Bereshis didn't start with an end, even though that also was really it. But Bereshis didn't start with an end, right? But since then, everything that's happening is the culmination of things that have been put into place from the beginning of time. And that's why I say Malchus Cha Malchus Kol Olamim, right? Hashem's Malchus, it spans all of time. Because anything that's happening now is not just Hashem in control now, but it's a result of the fact that Hashem was in control 1,000 years ago and 2,000 years ago. So this is the point that the Chavis of Ovis is making. He's just elaborating on it a little bit more. When you see something happen that's the immediate result of X, don't think, oh, wow, it's a good thing that X was in place then, because what would have happened if it wasn't? No, Hashem made sure that X, which seems like a very haphazard kind of thing, right? Like I said, that pair of chavuses came out at exactly the right time. No, their timing in the Beis Medrash was already, we would point to a whole chain of events in the weeks preceding it that caused this one to leave his house at that time and that one to cause it to leave his house at that time. It's all part of Hashem's master plan. So this is the point that he's making, point number 7. But you know what? Let's just recap this because, okay, as usual, we covered less than we thought, but I don't usually regret that. I don't usually regret that. Yeah, okay. But let's recap. This is point number 1 of the 5 things you need in place for ultimate bitachon. What's point number 1? Really internalizing, reminding ourselves of those 7 points. You're facing a situation. The truth is not just when you're facing a situation. This is what you should be sensing in all of life. Emuna, bitachon is emuna applied. It's not relevant just when you're facing a questionable situation. When everything is fine, bitachon is very relevant too. In fact, it can be an even bigger challenge. The sense that, why are things fine? Because I'm in Hashem's hands, right? But what is the ingredients of that sense of bitachon? It's the knowledge that I'm in Hashem's hands. What does that mean? What's the significance of that? Hashem loves me intensely. He knows what's best for me. He can achieve whatever he wants, which means that if something that's good for me did not happen, it's because he could have done it, but he knew it's not best for me, right? He's never distracted from me. He's focused on me all the time, 24 hours a day. Nobody else can get in a foot or a finger unless it's part of his plan. And you don't need to worry about earning it. Hashem has been doing it from you way before you are capable of earning anything. And that Hashem is, when he's doing anything in your life, he's dealing not just with the here and now, but he's dealing with the full span of your life, past, present, future. Focusing on these points and then facing a situation puts you into a very different place. Okay, this was to an extent a recap of last week. But you know what? I keep saying these 7 points are perhaps the red letters of Shah B'Tochen. If you're going to come away with something, it's these 7 points. But Bezos Hashem, will see how the Chavis HaLovis will expand on that. Bezos Hashem next week. Agut Tevach.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Good week. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy your Tu B'Shvat.
Thank you.